Good evening, everyone. This is John W. Vandercook speaking for Alka-Seltzer, bringing you the news of the world with reports by shortwave radio from overseas. The Moscow radio has just announced that an American bombing plane made a forced landing on far eastern Russian Siberian soil shortly after the first U.S. air raid on Japan last Saturday. The American crew has been interned in Russia, according to the rules of international law. The gasoline allowance for Eastern America's 10 million cars, Secretary Icke said today, has not been fixed. The figure of the likely ration given out yesterday of around 5 gallons a week now turns out to have been entirely unofficial and based probably only on some reporter's guess. The petroleum coordinator hopes that Easterners will be able to have quite a bit more gas than that. In France today, as part of their new pose as friends of Laval-bossed France, the Germans have released 20 more hostages who were awaiting the death penalty. But for each man let go, 6 other Frenchmen have been killed by the Germans just since April 1st. And now a word from Charles Lyon.
Along about this time of year, is it often your bad luck to catch cold? If you have a cold now, by all means, take care of yourself. And for prompt relief of your misery, take Alka-Seltzer. Start taking Alka-Seltzer at once for relief of that dull, aching, miserable feeling. And get more rest than usual, too. Stay out of drafts, dress comfortably, get your daily allotment of vitamins. And listen, if your cold causes a sore throat, you like Alka-Seltzer as a gargle, too. And don't forget, for prompt relief of your distress, get Alka-Seltzer from your druggist and use it. And now, the news of the world.
For our third direct report from distant India in the past week, we switch now to our own reporter in New Delhi.
This is Salsa Senor, speaking to New Delhi. Last Monday, I gave you the opinions of certain laboring class Indians regarding the Japanese threat to India. Today, I have been asking the young democratic marauder of Indore, who made America well, about the war effort of his state. One of the 600 armed principalities of India, ruled by princes and bound by separate treaties to the British crown. Indore, about 300 miles northeast of Bombay, is the size of New Hampshire, with a population of 1.5 million people, most of whom farm the land. When I used the term war effort, the marauder corrected me. It's no longer a question of that, he said, but of active defense. All along, we have been contributing as much as possible to the war effort in troops, money, and the output of the Indore cotton mills. Now I'm going to try to organize the defense of my state on a popular basis. Circumstances have put me in the position of an autocrat, but I am democratic by conviction. I want the movement for the self-defense of my people to begin at the bottom. I shall ask them for suggestions. In a very short time, I propose to call together the detail, the hereditary headman of each village. There are between 2,000 and 3,000 villages in Indore. I shall arrange transportation so that as many as possible can come, even from the remote districts. In the simplest language, I shall endeavor to explain the grievances to this gathering, pointing out why it is Americans to band together against the threat of the Japanese. They know every thought and every reaction of the villagers, and so, basing our program on their recommendations, backed by what help I can give, I hope for the enthusiastic cooperation of one and all, he concluded. Now, goodbye from Delhi.
Okay, India. And now a report from a member of our staff who is covering developments in Australia.
Calling from Allied headquarters in Australia. The Washington announcement that New Zealand and the South Pacific Islands now constitute an Allied naval command area under U.S. Vice Admiral Gormley clears up the last of the outstanding strategical unknowns in the Allied Far Eastern command area. It is obvious now that MacArthur will directly command only what remains of the United States Asiatic Fleet that was originally based under Vice Admiral Hart in the Philippines and later fought in the Java Sea against overwhelming odds.
It is revealing no information of value to the enemy to point out that our tiny Asiatic fleet is not what you could call a powerful offensive force. It never was, for that matter. The American Pacific fleet, wherever it might be, is the real naval offensive weapon of the United Nations. It would be stupid to assume that if a chance arose to hurt the enemy, there would be even the slightest hesitation on either MacArthur's or Gormley's part to cooperate to the fullest possible extent. There is no friction between the two commands. I'm officially pointed out here that the only reason for the separation of New Zealand from the MacArthur command is that the Supreme Allied Strategic Council thought the arrangement would further our war efforts. However, it must be admitted that after all the talk of a simple, centralized command being an absolute essential for success, this new division of power is something of a disappointment. This is Martin Negronsky returning you now to San Francisco.
Next, we hear from far-off Russia and our reporter in Kuibyshev.
This is Robert Mandoff speaking from Kuibyshev. The new American ambassador to Soviet Russia, Admiral Stanley, conferred today with Joseph Stalin. The conference took place in the Kremlin and lasted for more than an hour. The Commissar for Foreign Affairs, Monsieur Molotov, was present at the interview, no details of which have as yet been disclosed. The Admiral has been in Moscow for nearly 2 weeks, presenting credentials, meeting Soviet leaders, and studying the life of the capital, which is directing and inspiring Russia's great war effort. Several days before Ambassador Stanley's arrival in the USSR, Joseph Stalin conferred with the new British envoy, Sir Archibald Clark Carr. Returning from Moscow, he landed on the Kuibyshev airfield some 10 minutes before Admiral Stanley alighted from the plane which brought him to Russia's diplomatic capital from Tehran. Sir Archibald waited in the aerodrome to greet our ambassador and managed to have several conferences with him before he left for Moscow. No major change has taken in the political and military situation for the past 24 hours. But the Red Army has reported several successes on various fronts, particularly in the vicinity of Bryansk, where the Germans are being subjected to terrific pressure, and on the central sector. There, the Russian advance has become so threatening that the Germans are throwing new reserves into the battle and are furiously building new fortifications in an effort to stem the advancing Red Army. But in vain. The latest reports speak of new Soviet successes despite the additional obstacles created by the spring thaw, which has converted rivulets into roaring torrents and valleys into bogs. Goodman from Kuibyshev.
This is San Francisco, switching you back to John W. Vandercook in New York.
From the beginning, the battle for the colony of Burma has had in many people's minds a kind of unreality. So much else has happened. Burma, when one glanced at its unfamiliar shape upon a map, looked like a kind of dead-end street, a way to nowhere. But the Japanese, by their actions in that area, have now shown unmistakably that they regard Burma as perhaps the most important battlefield of all. Except for one small victory whose fruits were only enjoyed for a few hours, neither the British nor the Chinese have once won a Burma victory, or even strongly held against any part of the Japanese offensive. For the Japs have given Burma all they've got. Except for China, the Japs have now concentrated in Burma more troops than they are employing on any other battlefront. Tens of thousands of Japanese veterans of the Java victory and from the Philippines have been sent there. A great force of the Jap Navy is safeguarding the Burma coast. Jap troop transports seem to be moving up to the Rangoon docks as safely as if they were in the harbor of Yokohama. Today, both the Allied defending armies against that gigantic enemy pressure have been forced to withdraw still farther to the north. And today, the Japs captured still another key position in the Salween River Valley. The general advance is toward Mandalay, which is still about 150 miles away. Plainly, the Japs consider Burma as perhaps the key to all of Asia. Out of Burma, the Japanese evidently think they can branch in two directions. For the two greatest prizes, and against, numerically at least, the two greatest antagonists in the world, India and China both. And now to Washington and to Earl Godwin.
And good evening, folks. Telephone conversation is not going to win this war, and so Don Nelson clamps down on new telephone installations, unless you can prove you're essential to war work or the public weal. And about that gas ration of 2.5 to 5 gallons a week, it had the whole East terrified and up in arms, and it turns out to be unofficial and probably incorrect. Oil boss Ickes and price boss and chief rationer Henderson both emitted roars you could have heard all the way to the oil fields. Those figures are too low and too drastic, but nobody has reneged on that half pound of sugar a week. And again, Admiral Jerry Land, chairman of the Maritime Commission, which is now launching 2 ships a day, mind you, told Congress that the government should end what he called infernal agitation among shipworkers, which Land says is delaying production. The admiral said the agitation he meant is the debate on closed or open shops, or this union or that. And he again called for freezing labor relations where they are today and letting it run just as is until the war's over and the job done. And doesn't the National Maritime Union lambaste the admiral for his continued references to loafing and delays? That Roosevelt message to Congress on the cost of living and whatnot next Monday. But the fireside radio chat sometime later. And here's a tip. Watch to see how the president treats the subject of limits on wages. If he favors wage ceilings, a limit has been reached on organized labor demands. If not, labor will continue to dominate in its own field. General MacArthur graduated from West Point 39 years ago, June 11, and Senator La Follette of Wisconsin wants that day this year to be legally known as MacArthur Day. The Senate passed a $19 billion war bill today, and during the debate on another bill, Vice President Wallace filled out the questionnaire for that registration of grandfathers next Monday. But the poor fish get a break. The government stops the manufacture of fishing tackle after May 31st, and that's all from Washington at this time.
More news in a moment. Can you beat this for convenience? You take just one small, pleasant-tasting tablet once a day for your basic daily requirements of vitamins A and D. And you take another small, pleasant-tasting tablet for your known basic requirements of vitamin B complex. Well, that's the easy, pleasant, one-a-day way of getting your daily vitamins A and D and vitamin B complex. Here is what each one-a-day vitamin A and D tablet contains. Listen. Every tablet contains as much vitamin A as 2 pounds of yellow corn, as much vitamin D as 1.25 pounds of butter, and as much vitamins A and D as 1.5 teaspoonfuls of USP minimum cod liver oil. In every one-a-day brand vitamin B complex tablet, you get as much vitamin B1 as 6 eggs, and as much vitamin B2 as 2.75 pounds of raw green beans. These, in addition to 10 milligrams of nicotinamide and 250 micrograms of vitamin B6. So remember, ask your druggist about one-a-day vitamins. Remember, just as that name one-a-day implies, only one tablet of each once a day is all you take. And think what that can mean to you in economy. One-a-day brand vitamins come only in tablet form. 2 products, one-a-day vitamin A and D tablets in the yellow box and one-a-day vitamin B complex tablets in the gray box. Look for the big one on each package. Now, back to the newsroom.
News from the Philippines today has been more scanty than on almost any day since the war began. From American sources, we learn only that fighting still continues between the Jap invaders and the Filipino and American forces on the 2 outer islands of Cebu and Panay. There has been no word of any kind today from the Manila Bay fort of Corregidor. And that's the news of the world. This is John W. Vandercook speaking for Alka-Seltzer. Until tomorrow at this same time, goodbye from the newsroom in New York.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.